Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? I always am. Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the U.S. uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in.
Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to canopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, everybody listening to Game of Roses can use the code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you. Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver five times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues. And today we have an incredibly special guest. Stand-up comedian, vlogger, host of Bachelor Rush Hour, a daily pop culture podcast, 24.1K Instagram, 80K YouTube, the hardest working man in Bachelor Nation, Dave Neal, is with us today.
So good to be here. This feels like eating a bowl of soup right now, being with you guys.
I hope it's good.
Oh, you warm my soul.
You mean very hygge? What does soup mean to you?
It feels like I'm back. You know, I moved away and I feel like I'm back home with you guys right now.
Yeah. Well, we definitely want to talk about
Dave.
That. What is it like living in slider country, Nashville?
You know, there's some MAGA hats here. There's a little... It's a little different. It's cornbread territory. You know, it's a little different.
The first time I ever saw the Confederate flag in real life was in Nashville.
Lots of Confederate flags. Yeah.
When I was in high school.
Wow.
Yeah. But look, I mean, I needed to buy a home for my family, and we're only 4 hours from my wife's hometown in Kentucky. And we're pretty close to the East Coast now. So that's, you know, that's what it did for us.
How is it living in Slider Country with regard to other Bachelor players and stuff? Obviously, you're now in Caitlin Bristow country. There's a bunch of Bachelor players who live there. Do you run into people on the street? It is a small town.
Well, to be honest, Caitlin, you can credit her for the reason I moved here. I wanted to be close to her. No,
the power of a parasocial relationship.
She invited me on her podcast last May, and I said, all right, sure, I'll fly in for that. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And then I did a stand-up gig, and I was like, oh, Nashville's got it going on. And then I did the thing nobody should do. I looked on Zillow at homes, and I saw mega mansions that are in your budget. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. And then once we got pregnant, I was like, hey, let me at least take my wife to Nashville for the weekend and knock it off our box if she doesn't like it. And then we put an offer in that weekend. She really liked it.
That's incredible.
Wow.
So it was immediate.
So you moved literally to Nashville for Caitlin Bristow.
Well, I mean, she was my gateway drug. She was the marijuana that got me in the meth world of, you know, podcasting over here.
I try to be that person for everyone who comes to LA with varying degrees of success.
Yeah, well, it's a tough sell, right? But financially, no state income tax, big homes. Mm-hmm. They hate Californians here, which is so funny. Like Cracker Barrel just changed their menu and they got rid of cornbread, and people are commenting in the Facebook groups like, oh, these Californians and their tofu are ruining our menus. And it's, yeah. And it's like, look, I'm sorry that your homes are affordably priced, but you know, anyone who runs their OnlyFans account is going to be moving to Nashville. It's a better tax situation for those that work from home.
Yeah. So you have no regrets.
Well, I mean, I miss California. I took advantage of every aspect of LA. I went walking on the beach all the time. I did Runyon Canyon. I did everything that like makes...
Drank from the waters of Villa de la Vina.
Oh, yeah. I smelled the urine in Koreatown on the ground, you know, like I did it all. But, you know, we just couldn't buy a home there. And I couldn't think about having a baby in a duplex. Like I'm just, no offense to that, but... You know, I wanted to put myself in a little bit of a better situation and do that whole like elder millennial, finally get some home, you know, buy a home and all that. So, you know, once we saw the home here, we kind of knew that we gave it our best go, but 10 years is closed. But hey, I mean, I'm going to probably come back for a month in the summer and I'll still do gigs and, you know.
Bi-coastal.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, this is in the end, this is just our new kind of. And we're like 10 minutes from the airport. So on that end, I'm like, wow, this is easy. I can fly in and out of Nashville very easily, super close to the East Coast. And then on the stand-up front, very close to a ton of markets, Atlanta, Huntsville, Chicago. I mean, everything's driving distance in the Midwest and the South.
That's great, man. I don't know. Nashville to me is, if I was going to move anywhere out of LA, it would be there, I think. Simply because it feels like it is becoming, to me anyway, a hub of reality television. I could see like a big reality TV coverage network headquartering there.
Totally. Yeah, no, I mean, and to answer your question, I haven't really run into anybody. Christina Mandrell, the love Christina and Braden came to my baby shower and I went to their engagement party. They were handing out little earrings you could wear, which was nice.
That's great.
Christina's father got his ear pierced by Braden on stage at their party, which was like a cool new tradition, I guess they're doing.
Bold.
I love this.
Yeah.
Dangle Nation family.
And Christina's kind of royalty. I mean, her and her sister have beautiful voices. Her mom was there. They were all singing. I was like, this, you know, it's a, you can really, I mean, I would not want to be a musician in Nashville trying to make it. That's probably as bad as a comedian in LA trying to make it. It's just like, how do you deal with the competition? It's everywhere.
Yeah, totally. Well, luckily I'm not a musician, at least not a country musician. So if I did move there, I'd be okay. Maybe I could start the EDM area of Nashville. let me ask you about this, Dave. The lawsuit. We have to discuss this. Now, we know kind of the surface level that everyone knows. You know it intimately because you're involved in it. We're talking, of course, about the lawsuit that was filed against Clayton Eckerd last year that involved paternity tests and all this stuff. And then you got embroiled in it too. Can you give us just kind of a rundown of your involvement in this and what it has been like for you over the course of the last year?
Well, I am now officially a member of the Professional Society of Journalists, which is to better protect me from, you know, I'm being threatened with many lawsuits. I was sued for harassment by a lady I refer to as Jane Doe. Her name is pretty easy to find. She's a self-help podcaster. Mm-hmm. And which, by the way, she sues everybody, which is funny. Like,
and this is the person who sued Clayton Eckerd too, right?
Yes. Like, she's like, yeah, if you just sue people when you have problems, that's how you solve it. Like, I'm addicted to sugar. I'm going to sue brownies now. Like, you know, that's her. So her dad was a very well-known radio DJ in San Francisco, you know, to the tune of making $1 million a year, you know, big in his heyday, like the Rock Morning Channel or whatever. Okay. So she comes from this family that, I guess is pretty well off. Clayton gets involved and he claims, and he's never changed his story, that they've never had sex. And of course she leaks the story to The Sun, which she has now admitted to. They're the only magazine to run with this story, but it's, you know, for the most part ruined his life. His story hasn't changed. Hers has changed considerably. Now, my reporting of it was pretty straightforward. Like, she thinks everything I do is pro bachelor, but you guys know how it is. Sure. We're all pretty critical. I was critical of Colton Underwood when he stalked Cassie Randolph, and I covered that story. And now I've been critical of what believes to be a scam, where it has now been revealed she claims to have been pregnant by at least 4 different men, all have ended in abortions or miscarriages. So, you know, polite and respect to your audience, big trigger warnings on the whole conversation, because it's a lot of people's belief that she weaponized a very personal circumstance and used it to try to sucker men into dating contracts.
Are all of these men that she has sued previous on reality TV in some way?
No, that was her big mistake. Okay. She was able to get restraining orders on the last 3 men, Mike, Greg, and now Clayton, and use those restraining, which, by the way, are very easy to get. Her restraining order against me was denied in LA Superior Court on First Amendment rights because she's never met me and I'm just reporting on the story. But she tried to get one against me as well. And she's also contacted the FBI and made wild allegations about me, all in an effort to get me to delete my content. She doesn't want the truth coming out. What's beautiful about Bachelor Nation is it can be very toxic, but when people come together, the justice-oriented members of the internet really have put in a lot of work.
She underestimated the fourth audience, Bachelor Nation, their investigative skills as well.
Well, I always say it's ironic she took the story to The Sun, because the story all fell apart because she flew too close to The Sun. She got way too. I mean, it's true. It's so ironic. But she got, she benefited on the belief that nobody was watching in the previous cases. She had accusations of being pregnant, and then you would find out that. That they were reverse Google, image searched ultrasounds from previous blogs. And every time her story would get smarter to the point where now she's claiming what's called invisible twin syndrome, which is one of the twins is absorbed, the other. So what happened was we kind of got onto the story early and knew she was full of shit. And trust me, the last thing I would have ever wanted to do is be like, I think she's about to claim she's going to have a miscarriage. Like, we knew she was going to do all of this because all of her correspondence, which she shared, she's claimed, oh, no one's sharing her side of the story. She's battling with people on Reddit. She's sharing all of her evidence that she's pregnant. It's all led back to fabrications. The internet found her twin ultrasound video to be fabricated from a 6-year-old YouTube channel. She now claims it wasn't hers, even though she sent it directly to Reality Steve. Like, we have all this evidence, iron tight. She's made claims about the date. You know, basically, she said she was intimate with Clayton, and he then shared the emails that she had redacted a lot of the emails. And it's one thing to redact names and phone numbers, but she redacted a subject line, and people were like, what's in this email? Well, Clayton shared it, and it basically was him saying, hey, what are you doing, Jane? We've only had oral sex. There's no way I got you pregnant. She gaslighted him to the extent that he finally believed he was pregnant because she did test positive for indicators of pregnancy, a pregnancy test, which is the hormone HCG. Now that we're seeing her blood level, her levels of HCG were actually at 102, and the acceptable level for twins at that stage would have been like 20,000. So She was testing positive for HCG, knew she would test positive for pregnancies, and claimed she thought she was pregnant like as early as 5 days after the ill-fated blowies. So when you look at all this evidence, you go, and when you factor it with the fact that this happened over and over again, you go, wow, this is wild. And I think it's a fair assumption to make. Now, her new lawyer's threatening to sue me till I'm homeless. He knows my wife's pregnant, about to have a baby. He's threatening to put us out on the streets. He's it's real crazy what he's doing out there publicly. Mm. He's publicly commenting on all of this. And we're just like, hey, look, let us do our job. We're trying to get the truth out there.
Dave, have you ever had anyone come after you for reporting before?
No. I've never had an issue with the law. The only time I've ever been involved in like a deposition was when I was in a car accident and an insurance company had to depose me, but it was all on camera. And it was clearly a lady ran into me, but that was my only time I've never had any issues this way. I've never been threatened with a lawsuit. She sent me multiple cease and desists. And they were all just ridiculous. They were meaningless. And then she finally got an injunction against harassment on me called an IAH, which is essentially like a restraining order of the non like personal type. So non-family court, as in someone she wasn't in a relationship with. That trial kept on getting pushed back until the point where she eventually dropped her case against me. And I have to, some people say, oh, the case was settled. I didn't take a dollar from her. She didn't take a dollar from me. All she wanted was for me to delete my videos. And I refused to do that because this is the reporting. This is the truth. And I had nothing to hide behind. The night before, so at this point I live in Nashville. I buy a refundable flight because I knew what game she was going to play. So the night before, you know, I got one of those flights I could refund like 20 minutes before it takes off because I was going to take this all the way to the end, but I was prepared to go to LA. And I said, listen, you don't want to lose to me because I'll be doing this speech from the LA, you know, court floor. I'll be like really going to make a big stink out of this. And the night before, she wanted me to agree to a stipulation that I wouldn't incite any violence onto her. And first of all, that's illegal. That's like agreeing to a stipulation. Like, I won't kill you. Like, of course I'm not going to incite violence. I never have. Not only that, I've got about 80 instances of my audience pulling together every time where I said, don't go in, don't do anything. She's going to use it against us, whatever. Well, I signed that because it's kind of one of those, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And she drops her case against me. Like something like 4 hours later, she gets a death threat sent to her. And people can sort of think what they want about where that death threat came from. But it came from an anonymous Facebook account. And she did, as far as I know, nothing to find out who the account was. And then it all just went away. And it was another, you know, sort of interesting moment in this sort of saga of hers where she'll do anything to get the truth from surfacing and yet then complain when people, like, for instance, she wrote a couple Medium articles about me, calling me a cyber bully and all these things. I've never said her name like really publicly, even though I'm allowed to. Because I didn't want her to play a victim here. I was like, you know what? We're just going to go for Clayton's justice. So she makes these articles where she calls me out by name. She, of course, said she was suicidal and she was going to kill herself if I kept making these videos, you know, complete. And that's why the FBI got involved, because they have a division that covers people that are threatening self-harm. So I have like the audio I've played, of Hannah Clark from the FBI calling Scottsdale police to do wellness checks on her. Like, all the systems are in place to protect her. But what she realized was people were Googling my name and then finding the truth and going, oh my gosh, she's made this all up. There's fraudulent medical records. There's repeat stories. And she then deleted my name from the conversation. She also released a video where, you know, my guess is she's trying to fabricate victimhood. And because she had a story from a couple years ago based on one of her exes who was also a pregnancy story where the ex was verbally abusive to her. And that story she turned into a TEDx talk. So it's just my guess, like, she's not necessarily out for money, but in today's world, she's out for something more like notoriety. Maybe. I don't know. I struggle to know what her game plan is other than it wasn't until Clayton decided, hey, we crossed the line, that she kind of...
I'm not really sure the game plan is well thought out here.
Yeah. But it does seem to be repetitive at the very least. I mean, do you think that Clayton became a part of this because she was seeking somebody who had like a higher profile to do this to?
Well, she was always on The League and other sort of high level dating websites. So one of her first, one of the first man she claims to have been knocked up by, his name's Matt. He's a high end guy in San Francisco. His story only came out recently, and I don't give his full name out. It's on the internet, but he was outed by her own lawyer. He doesn't want anything to do with it, but that story kind of went away, and we're calling him victim zero because Mike Maricini's victim one, Greg Gillespie victim two, and Clayton Eckard victim three. And Greg Gillespie has a whole, you know, slew of instances where she was creating limited, you know how like on Instagram you can send story to your close friend audience? Well, from all accounts, she had him from a burner account, or she had his burner account as her limited friends and was sending crazy messages like, can't wait for the twins to arrive, because she also claimed twin pregnancy with the last guy too. And I mean, just these instances of harassing, but she got away with it because she had a restraining order against him. With Clayton, he has received a injunction against harassment on her. So she has a restraining order on him. He has an IAH against her. They're not allowed to contact each other, but the judge ruled that, you know, she sent 500 emails from multiple phone numbers. She wouldn't stop sending messages. He would unblock her to say, leave me alone, then reblock her. And she would take that as sort of, you know, she gave him contracts that said, if we date with intention, I'll get rid of the baby. So she used the pregnancy. And whether or not people believe she was pregnant, which so far no one publicly does, because so far her medical records only show fabricated ultrasounds. The one ultrasound that has yet to be proven to be hers, she claims she got at Planned Parenthood Mission Viejo. But when you call Planned Parenthood Mission Viejo, they say, oh yeah, we don't even offer ultrasounds. Now, that ultrasound has the Scottsdale Medical Imaging Lab, SMIL, logo on it. She now has admitted in her depositions to altering the ultrasounds to have the wrong locations on them. But she claims she did that because she didn't want Clayton to find her. Her lawyer has said, hey, if I find out she lies, I'm going to drop her. Now her lawyer is saying, so what that she lied? So it's just, it almost feels like I'm not in the same world as reality as some of these people were up against, because she keeps shifting the goalpost. So what happened was, we knew all along she was going to have a miscarriage because Clayton called her bluff. Clayton didn't play her game. He didn't sign the dating contract. You know, he got an email from her mom saying, we can't find her. We think she's suicidal. You're the only one that can contact her, Clayton, which again, could have been an email from her. It just all read so suspicious. Well, come January, she finally says, I'm no longer pregnant. I don't want to talk about it. Let's dismiss this case. Let's dismiss the paternity case. And everyone's like, no, no, no. Like, let's continue this. This is wrong. And it was at that point she had started to write articles claiming to be the victim that I believe Clayton and everyone else knew. She's going to come back with a story in 6 months or a year about how The Bachelor was his deadbeat guy. So he wanted to be to make sure he could prove she was never pregnant. The other smoking gun information is that he finally got a pregnancy test, a paternity test done. She was under the belief you couldn't do a prenatal paternity test on twins, which, by the way, would make it very convenient if you claim to have twins. Well, they can't test paternity. And then so if you miscarry, you just would have never known who they were. So even though he claims they never had sex, as a guy does, who's being accused of something, he found a company that now does paternity testing prenatally using new state-of-the-art technology. They're called RavGen. So he gets RavGen involved, calls her bluff. They go to her house, draw her blood. They go. He goes to their lab. They draw the blood. You know, it's all, you know, there's no mixing of the evidence. This is done for like court orders. So they're very serious about it. Well, it comes back little to no fetal DNA.
We remember that video.
I remember that video. Happy Friday.
Man, when that video came out, I was in Qatar, in the Qatar airport in the Middle East. I just got back from my baby moon in the Maldives, which is south of India. I'm as far away from the world as you can be. Mm-hmm. But as you guys know, in the game of like breaking and like reporting on stories, I had 20 minutes before my flight boarded when that story came out. And I was like, if I don't get the story up now, I'm going to be thinking about it for the next 16 hours as it loses
You know, as, you know, everyone else is going to cover it. I'm going to be watching Zachary Reality's TikToks going, it could have been
me. It could have been me, Zachary.
I literally had my like internet, my laptop open in the terminal, walking into the airport. Like I had already shot the video in the terminal, like this terrible quality video break, you know, talking about the story. And then I had to like leave my laptop against the window of the flight as it was preparing to take off. And it uploaded at the last second, which again is meaningless, but just to show you how I was like, I got to be on this story. But then, yeah, little to no fetal DNA. She comes back and says, you guys are wrong. The testing's ongoing. This is nonsense, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you got to be kidding me. You know, little to no fetal DNA when there are twins means they could not find evidence of any DNA in her blood that was not hers. Not even whether or not it was him as the father. So say they find DNA and then they proves it wasn't his. That's a normal paternity case. Jerry Springer style is, all right, I had sex with these two guys. Who's the dad? These tests aren't set up for instances where there's nothing to find. So it's almost me being like, go find that treasure I know is buried back over there. And you're like, we can't find it. And then I go, well, that doesn't mean it's not there. You just didn't find it. So it's almost like you can't prove the negative. So they do a second test, a third test. They've done four tests. Three have come back little to no fetal DNA. The other test was delayed in transit. So they couldn't use it because the blood, it took too long to get there. So you got a professional company that says little to no, I mean, to the point, trust me, I've thought to myself so many times, is Clayton lying to me? I need to make sure I'm not being duped. I'm reporting on this. I get him on the phone. I call RavGen, you know, the company, because I can't get the information without either him or Jane Doe, you know, accessing it. And they say, look, we can't print this out for you, but we can tell you there's little to no fetal DNA. And it wasn't until, so I heard it from my own ears. I have the recording of it. They knew I was recording it. And it wasn't until the recent court orders where they're actually getting whatever the scientific paperwork is of that. But it's like, it's wicked. It's wicked to be sued and threatened for lawsuits when all we're doing is trying to follow the evidence. I'm a big believer in people, except when there's cases where they're trying to deceive. And I think it's clear that there's been multiple cases where she's done the same thing. I mean, who's 32 years old that's been pregnant at least four times, several times with twins, and had very similar circumstances where she never proved she had ultrasounds? And by the way, anyone who's pregnant is listening to this going, this is so easy to prove. I mean, I could go into you with a gun to my head in the next minute. I could show you 15 different ultrasounds of my beautiful, you know, baby boy who's due next week. I could show you every 2 weeks we go for the first, you know, for the first, I don't know, 4 months. And then they kind of do the Doppler readings of the heart. And you have so much evidence. And she's not some, you know, poor person who doesn't have access to medical care. Her dad's receiving the best medical care for Parkinson's. She comes from a wealthy family. She clearly can go get an ultrasound, and she hasn't provided that evidence. And of all of the places so far where they've said they were going to disclose this evidence, it's come back that it doesn't exist. Now, the reason why Clayton was doing a good job fighting this on his own, but we saw that, you know, she showed up to their injunction against harassment hearing with a lawyer, and we were like, oh boy, you know, he was making good points, but they were objecting to it. Like, he just didn't know how to work as a lawyer in the system. He's not a lawyer. So even though he showed up with his binder full of information, it was getting a little dodgy. Well, what happened was, they didn't have enough time to finish the case. So the judge said, we're going to meet back next week. And it was after that moment we started the GoFundMe, raised money for him, and he raised enough money to hire the same lawyer that represented the previous guy, Greg Gillespie, victim number two.
Sure.
That lawyer has a bone to pick with Jane Doe because she she emailed the judge, which you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to directly email the judge. She emailed the judge saying, I have reason to believe there is and I hate to say it, but a rape conspiracy out against me from Greg and his lawyer, who's also named Greg. And this lawyer had never met her before. The judge said, this is wildly, you know, inappropriate.
What is a rape conspiracy?
I don't know. Like, they had some conspiracy to do, like, literally all of these things. And she emailed them privately in hopes that there would be maybe some girl power moment where they help her out. But they're like, no, they reported it. They shared it. It's all in the medical records. And then she just goes on with her case. So now you've got Clayton, who who's been fighting this probably to the tune of $150,000 legal bill. He's got a lawyer who's fighting this and paying his own
and time.
Yeah, I mean, he's fighting it with his own time, but also he's got to pay his own lawyers to be a part of it. And now they have bar complaints filed against them. And all they're trying to do is put an end to the senseless litigation.
But if it goes to litigation and Clayton wins, generally speaking, all of his legal fees will be paid for by her.
Yes, if she has the money. Now, whether she has the money or not is yet to be seen. Mm-hmm. Although, as I reported this week, her lawyer, who's been blogging and doing all of this public, you know, blogging to, you know, he's made like a, you know, the lawyers just don't do this. They stick to the case. But he made this concession and said, well, since Jane Doe first met Clayton because he was her real estate agent, apparently the lawyer says she had $450,000 in her checking account ready to buy a couple homes. Now, I don't believe that. I haven't seen the proof of that, but we have seen evidence where she's admitted to fabricating documents. Whether she had that money or not, you can imagine as Clayton's pulling away from her and saying, oh, I don't think we should be doing this. She's saying, are you kidding me? I'm trying to buy two homes from you. You'll have $100,000 or $200,000 commission. So she's almost dangling this financial contract with him over him. So she wanted to buy some homes. He didn't put the offer in. And as her real estate agent, he had a contractual duty to do that. And I don't know the specifics of it, but he claims he tried to pass her off to someone else in the law firm. It was literally like his second week at the law firm. And he had to be like, hey, I got two blowjobs from this lady and I can't represent her now. She's kind of like texting me nonstop. So he passes her off. And what happened recently, again, this was all in the summer and fall, but what happened recently was this case is happening June 10th. All of the evidence is on Clayton's side. I mean, you know, her side's got the fringe legal theories because she changed the date of miscarriage like five different times. And there's obviously no proof of the bodies, even though she claims she had photos of the fetal sacs. I mean, one thing after another, now she claims they were absorbed. How could there be proof? And again, there is such thing as vanishing fetal syndrome or twin syndrome where like you lose a twin, but that's early on in a pregnancy, not after she claimed in her deposition that they were the size of her hand. So she sends an email to Clayton's attorney, Greg Woodnick, saying, I'm going to sue Clayton for $1.36 million because that's the amount of money lost based on the homes I was going to buy. Now, first of all, she wasn't going to pay cash for the homes anyway. So like she wouldn't have lost out on that much money. They weren't going to have gone up in value and all those things in this amount of time. Maybe she would have been out 80 grand or whatever. I don't know. But that never happened. He didn't take her seriously. But they shared that email in court documents as like, hello, she's extorting my client. So she said, I'm going to sue you for $1.36 million unless we can reach an agreement where you drop this lawsuit against me. So it's just like, it's just insane that this is happening right under everyone's nose. And no one really knows what the judge thinks because the judge at this point has been like a rock star, but she's just quietly letting it all play out.
Sure.
Every attempt that Jane Doe has made to have this case dismissed, the judge has said no. Clayton's lawyer has asked for more time to litigate their point from 45 minutes to 2 hours. The judge has said yes. So the judge, the Clayton's asked for a discovery to show like, hey, we just want to find out her medical records. The judge gave it like an extra 3 years rather than just finding the 2023 info. I think the judge said, go get it all the way back to 2020. Nothing, crickets. And the best thing I can say, because I know we share a big audience, Bachelor Nation has had Clayton's ass by raising the money to get him a lawyer. During the harassment hearing, his lawyer, Clayton's lawyer, was able to ask so many great questions that got her on the record saying she was seeing Dr. McCool for this and for that. I saw Dr. Higley. They got her to say all these things on record. And now her new lawyer, because she's been through 12 different lawyers throughout all of the different proceedings through the Clayton case, at least three lawyers. But now the lawyer says she never claims she received medical attention from those doctors. She just claims she sought medical attention from them. So the lawyer's trying to play this like linguistic, battle, but she's on record saying, I saw this guy last week. So it's like, she's just caught dead in the water. And yet new motions are coming out. As of today, her lawyer says they've got the new evidence. She's never shared it with anybody. Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, if she shows evidence that's like real evidence that she was pregnant, I would change my story. But as of now, it's like you just follow the evidence. Yeah. You know, you just follow it or lack thereof.
Wow. This is fascinating. June 10th, you say, is the date of the trial, unless before then anything can happen, right? There could be a settlement. Cases can be dropped. But Clayton's not going to drop his case.
They'd have to pay him like at least $10 million. I mean, what's it worth to have a settlement where you can no longer talk about this? He's lost gigs over it. She's emailed. I mean, there's documents of her emailing. How are you going to let Clayton, this guy who's threatening me, be a self-help speaker? You know, so people err on the side of caution. He could be proven innocent and still... Like this could affect him for years to come.
Of course, because it'll be like when you Google his name, this will be attached to it forever. Mm-hmm. It's a crappy situation, but thank you so much for explaining it all in great detail. I feel like that, to me, that's the most comprehensive explanation of the entire situation I've ever heard.
Oh, good. I mean, trust me, I always tell people, like, how much time do you have? It's a 10-hour convo or a 20-minute, but I'm still being threatened by her lawyer. I mean, I'm really to the point where I'm putting my house into trust and I'm protecting myself and I'm looking for insurances because he's threatening to make my wife and my family homeless. I mean, this is what he's saying publicly. Yeah. It's bananas that this exists. There have been bar complaints filed against him. But it's like, even if you think Bachelor Nation News is trash, it's like, this is like, what side, like, everybody's on the side of the truth coming out.
For sure.
Yeah. I like, thank you for going out on your own limb to expose the truth about this, because now you're getting wrapped up in it. It's
Thank you. They donated money to my legal bills, like the audience. They've supported the Patreon. They've come out of the woodworks to show that it's worth pursuing. And I just keep telling them, hey, keep fighting it, but I'm going to keep making videos about it. And, you know, I've gained some audience and I've lost some. Sure. Not everyone wants to hear stories about such a heavy topic, but I think it's the only way to fight it is to have the monetized aspect of it, to say, I have no involvement, but I will continue to talk about it because an audience wants to see this justice, as niche as this might be. I mean, you've got medical experts contacting me from all over the country, like heads of departments at Ivy League schools that want a piece of this because they want to get the truth out there, because this is wrong. This is wrong for victims. This is wrong for the family court system. It's just wrong.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, the only way to put it is, I think she flew too close to the sun.
Well, again, thanks for the layout of all of this stuff. We're going to obviously be very curious to see what happens June 10th. If this thing does go to trial, I don't know. From everything you've said, I have a feeling she may drop it, but then there's still Clayton's lawsuit, right?
Oh, but here's the thing. She can't drop it now.
Oh, it's been triggered.
She wanted the case dismissed and he's saying, no, like both sides. He's saying, no.
Got it.
I want to prove, like, he's now the only case left now that she's dropped her end. She's like, oh, there's no more paternity case closed. Yeah. And he's going, no. Now they're only arguing for fees, which means the judge will decide who's right and who's wrong here.
Great.
Because a lot of money on the table. So unless something wild happens, I'll be there June 10th. I'm going to live stream from the courthouse all day because I have a vested interest. I mean, Clayton's my lead blocker. I need to know that he's as protected legally as possible, because what the judge says on June 10th is going to really protect me.
Yeah. Yeah. We look forward to hearing your coverage of it, obviously.
Of course.
Let's move on to...
Please.
to Bachelor Season 28. This was the first season that did not have Mike Fleiss in earnest of Bachelor. Do you think that it was different in any way? And what did you just think generally of Bachelor season 28, Joey's season?
You know, I don't know if you guys have the same problem I do, but it's hard. It's almost like I'm staring too close to the artwork to see the beautiful picture. You know, it's like you ever look at a Monet too close and you're like, ugh. Like, I'll tell you what I really like, that the Golden Bachelor brought out the cold open.
Yeah.
Which Joe has been doing, like, coming up this season, blah, 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 blah. And then it's just loud noise. But now they're doing these quiet moments.
Yeah, spoilers.
Spoilers and some silent crying and things like that. So it looks like they might be trying to do a type of storytelling that's maybe more chicken soup for the soul than it is just trash TV. You know, maybe they're realizing that while it might not be the most shocking thing to fabricate a storyline early on, if you do tell a good story, you will get more people talking about it, it seems.
Yeah. Well, I mean, season 28, also the narrative they built was that he fell in love with two women who both fell in love with him, and they weren't bitter rivals and they weren't going on two-on-ones with each other. They both were friends. And so the end of this season was really about two friends accepting that they both fell in love with the same guy, but he's only in love with one of them. And the friend who was on the outside of that saying, hey, I get it, and I wish you nothing but the best. There was no toxicity in the final, which usually isn't the way it happens. Usually, whoever gets dismissed in the final is the big victim, and that leads to the bachelorette-dom, but she either has some kind of like horrible breakdown or a fuck you for leading me on kind of moment. And that just wasn't really in this season, and it worked. Like, I hope what they learned from it was that you can build this very sincere love story and make the final really about the choice that has to be made, not about how bad somebody's fucking each other over. I mean, like, look at Clayton Eckard's season, the rose ceremony from hell. They built him into just unmitigated disaster. Everyone hated him at the end of that season. Susie Evans rejected the final rose, you know? It was like, they're not doing that anymore.
Poor Clayton.
By the way, just some tea for from Clayton's season. So I had him. I did a show in Scottsdale a few weeks ago. All right, in March 28th last month.
Wyandotte country.
Yeah, I had Clayton on to do a Q&A, and I said someone asked a question about like, you know, them making him look bad, and he actually said that it was worse and they toned it down, which I thought was
holy shit.
he was like honestly, like, they actually helped me a little bit. It was actually worse. So I guess we'll never see that footage. But what's interesting with Joey is I think Joey's a kind of a bad actor in the, like, due to his own kind heart, he couldn't sell to Daisy that he was still interested in her too. Mm-hmm. Versus Zach's season, you had Gabby and Katie. They did the friendship thing, but Gabby was so sort of crossed by the fact that he outed that they were together in the fantasy suite. So it almost looks like the difference was, it was almost like you could see it evolving to this type of ending, but it required Joey to be better at making it obvious who his choice was.
Yes, I think Joey was very good at it. Like, definitely putting in some subtle language to let each one of them know, you know, which way he was leaning. But that's also the producers. When the producers have a narrative that they have written for the end of the season, that's what's happening. And if you're not playing that game with them, they're going to make your life a living hell or eliminate you or whatever. I would wager that with Zach Shallcross's season, they were like, we're going to make him do the Sean Lowe, I'm not having sex with anybody, but oh, he's going to have sex with one person, and that's going to be the big dramatic thing that pisses somebody off. They allowed Joey to essentially just walk into that finale.
They protected him.
Yeah, they protected him in the edit, and I think in the production of the season, as well as the two finalists. They protected Daisy, they protected Kelsey Anderson, I think.
I also do think he is a good actor, because I feel like he was able to be super present with each person who was on the season when they're telling him their sad stories. He seems extremely empathetic and caring and interested.
Oh yeah, and you know what, it might be more of a credit to Daisy's intuition for reading it and just knowing she was like, I'm just not the one.
Yeah.
Which, you know, everyone has those doubts, but then you kind of talk yourself out of those doubts and you go, well, I'm just going crazy. Like, Daisy didn't believe that she was the one, and you know, like, very obviously knew it wasn't her. And again, you know, with the previous season, with Zach's season, Gabby, I mean, it just goes to show, like, she made some comments when she was watching it being like, you got to be kidding me. Like, Gabby didn't get the red carpet treatment. She was truthfully, like, it's one thing to take the high road, but like, she was truthfully violated. And, you know, Zach and Katie look like a good, happy couple, but like, Gabby got the brunt of that season.
Yeah.
And didn't get paradise or a bunch of followers or any of those things, really.
Yeah.
And at least Daisy got a real...
And she got that silent fantasy suite date. Yeah. Where they took the sound out.
But also with Daisy, like, yes, she recognized it. But then what has to happen in order for that season to be produced as it was is she has to go to the producers and be like, look, I know it's not me. I want to do this where I go talk to Kelsey and we can be friends in the end. And the producers have to be like, yeah, okay, let's do that. because otherwise the producers are like, oh, we totally get it, but we need you to walk out there and have him dump you at the mm-hmm. final altar. They didn't do that.
This will be good for your bachelorette edit.
You're absolutely right that they have to provide the framework for that scene to happen. A lot of times people think, oh, I'll just go rogue and do my own thing. It's like, well, fat chance that that makes it into the edit. Like, you can't just, you know, it's like when someone's on taped TV, you can't just say what you want to say. It's just not going to make it. You got to kind of thread it in. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what goes on in the storyboarding, but there has to be a moment there where they've got a day or two to figure it out. You know, the producers, where they go, all right, well, man, can we make this the story? Yeah. And yeah, I mean, do you think that that's an option they have beforehand and they finally played it like a trick play that they finally made? Or do you think they called it on the spot?
I think that this is just my own take from the seasons that have been produced, especially the bubble seasons during COVID and all of that. I think during those seasons, the producers were in probably like the most controlling mode they've ever been. I think they had literal stories written for people from casting, and they were like, this is what's going to happen with that person. And when the person came in and was like, I'm not saying that in an ITM, I'm not doing that. Bye bye. You're gone night one. You're gone week one, whatever.
Mm-hmm. They gave people scripts at the Women Tell All to get on Paradise.
I think that still happens to some degree, but yes, they gave like written documents to some people at the tell-alls during those bubble seasons, and they said, read this exactly as we've written it and you'll get Paradise, and then you don't get Paradise, even if you do read it. But I think those days are kind of gone now, or at least in season 28, I felt something very different. And I think it is exactly what you're saying. Producing on the fly, allowing an organic situation to come about, and then saying to themselves, how do we make the best version of this thing that's happening organically? Not how do we force this thing that's happening organically into the pre-written script we already have, especially if it's contradictory to that.
You know, and I'm sure you have producers watching this, but it's, you know, audiences have gotten smarter. And it's like I got a show tonight. I'm going to go put together my set list of what I want to say on stage. But if somebody spills their beer when I walk on stage and I don't address it, the whole room is going to be like, why isn't the comic talking about the beer that was just spilled? Like, you have to evolve to what's actually happening. So yeah, you can have your script or you can have your playbook, but you got to have those tricks up your sleeve or be there in the moment and go, oh, this is really interesting. This thing's going on. Like, what if we water this and talk about this? And audiences, like producers and storyboard editors, they're just not as smart as what real life brings. And by real life, I mean, you know, this is sort of a controlled environment, but the players are still going to have their own mind and free will. And if you can get them to do things that weren't part of you, it might be better.
Yeah.
They've cast big characters. That's why they cast them. I just think they have been, and they need to trust the premise of the show. There's inherently drama in many people dating the same person.
Yeah. When they came in with Kelsey's, the card she left on his door that was like, we need to talk. It was just like, oh, it just reeked of like the producers are like, well, we need to have a twist. We need something to cliffhang on. Get her in there. Send her in with a card that makes him think everything's going to end. Ha, ha, ha. And it was like, no, don't do that. It screams to anybody who has watched the show for any amount of time that producers are interfering for literally no reason. And it's these moments like that are like super pro wrestling, where you're like, okay, come on. That's a no sell, as they call it in pro wrestling, in my opinion. It's like, she no sold you on that one, dude.
You're also having Kelsey come afterwards and make a TikTok, me purposely writing a super vague note to Joey and the producers there, like being like, of course, it wasn't my idea to have this just be the sentence.
Yeah, it's like a corporate Applebee's menu. It's like, they're just, it's so, you know, you can just hear 10 people in the room being like, but we need more. Yeah. And you're just like, they're, you know, this is why like a good script comes from, you know, not 50 people workshopping something, but like a real like bold idea.
Yes.
And that's why a lot of times like good reality TV comes from like a fringe cable network who just wants to try something new. But Bachelor is safe. This works. We need a hook to get the grandmas to talk about this in their knitting session before, you know, the finale. And it's like, I don't know, maybe we're evolving, and maybe they learned that audiences are like, okay, how many times can we do the, you know, I need to talk to you, or the 2-on-1 date or whatever.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that a lot of that is because of what we're calling third wave reality TV, which really has Traitors kind of at the forefront of that conversation, in my opinion. Have you seen Traitors at all?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Game of Roses is sponsored by BetterHelp. Clues. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. And if you keep them all bottled up, it can affect you negatively. Therapy is a great place to get things off your chest and figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. You might be taking care of your physical body, but are you taking care of that beautiful mind, Clues?
Yes.
I have benefited from therapy greatly in the past. It has helped me get through stressful experiences, manage boundaries, learn coping skills. You know, the whole premise of life is kind of it's a lot to undertake, and therapy can help with that.
Well, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do to get started is fill out a brief questionnaire. Then you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists literally at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GameOfRoses today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GameOfRoses.
I haven't.
You got to watch it. It's good. Traitors Season 3, U.S. Traitors Season 3, which will come out sometime this year, I believe is going to be the biggest reality TV show in the world, bar none. It's going to dominate. It basically is, the premise of it is the psychosocial game that's like Mafia or Werewolf, if you know those games. But they get basically like 20 people in this mansion, and then three of them are selected secretly to be, in quotes, traitors. Then the whole game is every night those three traitors get together in secret. They pick one person to murder. That person's eliminated from the show. And then also every day, everybody gets together at a round table, and the faithful, who are the opposite of the traitors, have to decide who they think the traitors are, and they vote one person out of the show. So the traitors are trying to see, like, lie to people and convince everybody that they're not traitors and we should vote this other person out, all the while picking people off one by one who start to get close to figuring out who they are. Season two of it in US was cast completely with giant reality stars from all different franchises, including obviously Peter Weber from Bachelor. But you have like Big Brother, Housewives, Survivor, Bachelor,
yeah,
all going head to head. And you get to see which of these franchises trains the best players in this weird psychosocial game. It's absolutely fascinating.
I'll check it out. Now, yeah. Do the audience know who the traitors
yes.
are or no?
We get to see who the traitors are as well. Maybe they'll do a season in the future where we don't know, which I think would be pretty fascinating too. But
should I just start with season two? Should I start with season two?
I would start with I don't know. They're both very good seasons. Season one is Ari Leyendyke as the Bachelor representative. I would say you won't be disappointed in either season with how your Bachelor players represent our beloved game. They both knock it out of the park. Season one is maybe a slightly better season.
I'll watch that if you watch Deal or No Deal Island. That's my favorite show.
Okay, I'll do it. What is this on? What's it on?
It's on NBC Hulu. It's amazing. The only reality star is Boston Rob. Everyone else is like random people. Mm-hmm. But it's as conniving as Survivor. They don't make you do all the stupid Survivor stuff, but every episode is like Deal or No Deal, but in a Survivor setting. It's, trust me when I say it's, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Okay, yeah, I'll check it out. I mean, I think for me, these third wave shows that are coming out, which basically are just like handpicking kind of reality celebrities to come and play these new games. House of Villains is one of these. World's Toughest Test, Special Forces is one of these, which, by the way, has obviously been dominated by Bachelor players in both seasons. I think we're going to start to see more and more of these types of games that are just like, these are the places you go if you get high enough on your series, whatever your kind of like first series is, whether it is a Survivor or Big Brother Bachelor. If you're known enough in these games, you get to go to these other games, these third wave shows. And I think that like those are affecting how Bachelor is produced. They're affecting how all of the other shows will be produced, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's a pipeline. It's like All Star Shore kind of in a way. But
yeah, exactly. I would say All Star Shore is technically a third wave because you had people from different franchises. Most of them were from the Shores, but you did have, obviously, Blake Horseman was on there. Giannina Gibelli was on there where they met. Obviously, now they have their hybrid child.
Dave, how do you feel about Jen Tran being cast as the next Bachelorette?
All right, here's the deal. I mean, now that I know that it was Daisy and Jess that declined it, I kind of feel bad because I don't think she's a good candidate, but I think it's going to be so messy because every interview I've heard, she just sounds young and not really knowing what she's doing there. And again, you say this and everyone thinks you're the worst person in the world, but like, I got to be honest, Maria for me was like first candidate Hall of Fame, going to be fantastic. Maria probably knows it's not worth her time because I started to break down like, all right, well, if you're the lead, you have to sign a 2-year contract. Maria's going to make money. She's going to make money as soon as she's off this deal. She's going to do whatever she wants to do. Mm. So maybe she just didn't think that the $150K was worth it.
Well, she supposedly shot. She shot 2 or 3 days as the Bachelorette, supposedly. These are the rumors that are swirling around the nation, and then decided this isn't for me for mental health reasons. And the show was like, okay, cool. And they kind of parted ways because we obviously saw her at the after the final rose in there in full support of Jen Tran as the next Bachelorette. I don't think she gets to come do that if she's on bad terms with the show.
I mean, it doesn't take much when you talk to any alumni to know, like, I just interviewed somebody who was one of the stars of the franchise not too long ago, and she's still in insane amounts of therapy, and she's afraid to even talk because she was just going to harass her. So you no surprise why people would want to get out of there as quick as possible and make their own life that doesn't involve, trying to get interviews pre-approved. Yeah. I thought Maria was so good, so funny, so down to earth. And I think she also had that kind of crazy sex appeal that would make the contestants lose their mind over her. But good for her for not feeling it.
Yeah. I mean, the contract that they give you for Bachelorette is 40 plus pages long. There are phrases in it like, we can develop new methods of manipulation that we haven't even developed yet, and we can implement those at any time without any prior written consent or acknowledgement. There's just wild things in that contract, and it locks you in. It locks you into all of this for a very long time. So I get what you're saying about, you know, that it wouldn't be financially viable. But all that said, maybe she can make the money without wearing the crown. Maria, I'm talking about. But I think wearing the crown puts you on such a different level. Like, if you're talking about getting into some of these third wave games, which is really what you're going into Bachelor for now, it's to be able to build a reality TV career that can span maybe a decade, maybe more. You have to hit the top level in order to be even considered for some of these shows. You've got to be a lead or at least a ring winner or a very important runner up.
I don't know. I think Maria might have surpassed it, though.
Maybe she could get on House of Villains or something, but
she was at those parties with Phaedra. Like, I think she'll get cast in a show. She doesn't need to be a lead first. Maybe it's not Traitors, but she could get on something else for sure.
I mean, who wouldn't put her on Dancing with the Stars? I put her on over Joey, you know, if they want to find someone.
Because now there's also rumors that like Paradise isn't happening this year. If she doesn't have that, like, to be somebody in the Bachelor world, in my opinion, you have to kind of be the center of the Bachelor attention for at least a year. Be like one of the main players off your season and wear a crown. There are some examples, like right prior to the pandemic happening, obviously Hannah Celeste, Madison Pruitt, they didn't get a chance for any of that because everything was delayed because of the pandemic. And they both went on to be super successful. That was also a different era where like all the top four were hitting 1 million Instagram followers, regardless of anything. I just think that Maria's I just don't know that she did enough in Bachelor Nation to warrant our continued attention of her wherever she goes next. There will be curiosity about it, but I don't know if it's an automatic lock that, like, I will watch everything Maria does on any TV show.
I don't know. 610K.
I think it's the Bachelor producer's fault for making her the subject of all of the nonsense throughout the season.
Yeah, they should have protected her.
I mean, yeah, they could have protected her. It's almost like, yeah, if you have a star pitcher coming up in the system, you don't put them in the pros until their curveball's ready. And she might look like a tough person, but she clearly didn't like being mischaracterized so much during the season. And then once the season aired, she got to see all of the conniving things going on and the manipulating. Mm-hmm. And then come the women tell all, the whole internet, everybody loves her. She's getting standing ovations, but it's like too little too late. She saw how dirty it can be. And like, trust me, I just feel like the juice isn't worth the squeeze at that point. You stop thinking about what's in it for me. And you go, you know what? I'll go live with my dad. I'll go move. I don't need this.
Yeah. Well,
I do think she has enough of a platform that she can springboard it into something else, or even just get even more popular on TikTok.
Maybe. I don't know. Because it's a year now.
Yeah. I love hearing you guys talk about her this way, because sometimes I felt crazy when I was like, oh my gosh, she's so good. And people would be like, I don't get it. And I'm like, what do you not get? Like, this is gold. Like, yeah. I like, you see it as like a producer. And I go, oh my gosh, like if I was, I've, you know, made all my sketch comedies where you're trying to cast that perfect female lead. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you need someone who's relatable to the women, but the men love her. I mean, she just hit all these boxes. Plus had a sense of humor. She was beautiful, but nothing was fake about her. I mean, everything was just like ready to go, and they just overproduced it with her.
She's a reality star, period.
We named the titles of a lot of our episodes, Maria Needs to Be the Bachelorette.
And I mean, this is something that we talked about too. Like, we are now, because of Third Wave, we are in this era where like whatever show you're producing, especially shows that are games like Bachelor, like Survivor, like Big Brother, it doesn't really matter who wins. It's who is the biggest star that comes out of that season, who pops off the screen. And that was definitely her, 100%. The fact that they tried to make her the Bachelorette was the right intention. The fact that they couldn't make it work means that they were bad at something. Mm-hmm. Some part of their producing gave her, like, didn't pass the smell test and she wanted out of there. That is on them.
And isn't it nice? It's so nice to see someone fight back and just show that even though she wasn't some sort of big name, she did have leverage. She built leverage and knew what she was worth. Now, to go back to Jen, for people that, you know, say, oh, well, you're not giving her a fair shot. I want Jen to kill it. I want Jen to kill it the way you want the new quarterback to kill it when the lead guy goes down and, or, you know, they got to bring in the third goalie out of the stands. Like, I want that person to be a legend. But in the only chance we saw Jen in the spotlight, she bombs her first joke and you go, would have Maria bombed that? No, Maria would have taken off. Like, the reason why Maria is not doing an interview right now is because the show has to kind of keep her quiet. Because Maria's, I'm sure she's talked to you, she's talked to me, she's requested all these interviews and it's just been crickets. And I'm like, well, the show, and it's, I don't blame the show. They know they need to get the Bachelor Nation stop talking about Maria and let Jen be the thing. And maybe, I hope Jen gives us a Pilot Pete level of fun season. I'm sure she will.
I think she will. I have high hopes despite the shot o'clock. I think that was the producer's fault. That wasn't her fault. And honestly, I did not see how good of a player Joey was when he was on Charity Season. And then literally, I think he's maybe the best Bachelor of all time. Like, I think he did so well. So I think, Jen, she could surprise us.
Yeah, I think she's got everything she needs. I just don't think they put her in the best position. Obviously, she was like at least third choice. And I just think, I think we're allowed to be like, well, we don't even know what we're seeing, because, I mean, the show didn't even know what they were going to be offering. How are we supposed to get behind it when there was no effort made to make that the choice?
Shot o'clock and Savage Love and all that. I don't know what eventually her promo will actually be, like what her tagline is going to be. I hope it's not Shot o'clock. I hope it's not. What was it? Not Savage Love. It was something else that she said.
I hope it's Let's Cuddle Naked in the Forest.
Vicious kind of love, something like that. I don't know. They need to figure out how they're going to promote it. But all that being said, I will say, Bachelor season 28 had what I believe is the deepest roster we have ever seen on any season. And for my money, anybody in the top 10 would have been an incredible bachelorette. And I know Jen Tran's coming in under these circumstances that are like not optimal for anyone because, like you're saying, third choice, they cast this for Maria. They cast all the guys for Maria. Now Jen's got to somehow weave through that. That said, I really think she's going to be perfectly capable. I think she's going
to
kill it.
Do you think Maria was choice number one and then Daisy was supposed to be after Maria, or did Maria, or did Daisy shut it down first?
I think Daisy shut it down first because they built that edit they gave her, like, that's the bachelorette, period. And then I think when Daisy was like, yeah, I'm good, I'm going to take my 800K and go home, they were like, shit, well, Maria's the next obvious choice. That's what Bachelor Nation wants. Everybody loved her. We'll give it to her. She says yes. They shoot a couple of days. She's like, actually, this ain't going to work for me. Peace. And they're like, fuck.
What was your reaction when they announced it? Because I was literally speechless. I couldn't believe it. Like, what was going through your head? Were you surprised?
Well, Daisy came out and they sat her down.
That episode was a roller coaster.
It really was. Because you had Dark Lord Palmer going, we're gonna tell you who's the next bachelorette. It could be somebody sitting right here. And Daisy was sitting there and I'm like, they're just giving that away. Then they bring her out and they say, are you ready to be the bachelorette? She's like, no, I'm not. And immediately everybody, myself included, was like, it's Maria. We got a fucking Maria bachelorette.
I know.
And then when it wasn't her, I mean, there was a little disappointment in that, but also like Jen Tran being the first Asian bachelorette, that is huge, you know? So like historically, at the very least, they're moving the needle in the right direction. That is good, I think, you know, if nothing else. I mean,
yeah, you're right. It's about giving the audience a chance to be like, all right, you can be disappointed and then become excited for Jen. It's just, you kind of built this thing up that people were like, all right, we just want to see more of Maria. And then you don't get it. It's like, okay, give people a second. Like we can all calm down. No one's sending hate to Jen or anything like that.
But to Lizzie's point too, I didn't think Joey was going to be a great bachelor, and he is again, maybe on the Mount Rushmore. So that said, I think a lot of that has to do with how the seasons are produced now. And if they just follow the same things they've been doing in Golden and what they did in 28, if they just do those same things in Jen's season, I think it's going to be fantastic. Mm-hmm. I don't see a way around it. It feels like they know how to produce the show again. I'll tell you what it feels like to me. It feels like the people in charge care about this show again. For a while there, it felt like they didn't. Like they hated the people on it. They hated their jobs. They hated having to make it. It doesn't feel like that to me anymore.
What do you think about that they're switching Bachelor Mansion for Jen's season at the beginning?
I mean, that mansion just looks like it's about to fall down. It looks so good. I hear nothing but like, I'm sure like there was going to be a hair straightener electrical fire any day now. The, you know, 15 women all compiled onto one outlet. You know, someone uses the microwave and the whole place goes up in smoke. I mean, I'm not one of those purists. Like the mansion must be wet. And I'm like, whatever, do it at a Ramada Inn. You know what I mean? Like the true fun comes from the characters and they only spend a day or two in the mansion anyway. I'll tell you what I like is I love everybody who said, oh, Jesse Palmer is going to be horrible. Just another vanilla guy, white toast. He is the show. In my opinion, I would put more time on Jesse getting to know the cast, and I would follow. I'd put a camera on him the whole time. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
Interesting.
I agree.
I would do this. I would do episode one is you're just with the players. You get to know all of them. Them hanging out in the hotel. And episode one ends with the first guys getting in their limos to go to the mansion. Episode two is night one, and then kind of keep it the same from there. But I think there's something about, like, for me, night one, it's very hard to care about anyone who's getting eliminated because we don't know any of these people. The most screen time that, like, your main character, other than the lead, obviously, is going to get in a night one is maybe like 5 minutes, maybe 10 in some crazy scenario, like a Hannah Sluss who does three steals and all that kind of shit, you know? It just becomes very hard to like really care about those players on night one. I think if you gave us like, even put it online, make it an episode zero. And it's like, you can just watch this on Hulu or watch it online somewhere where it's an hour of just getting to know the 30 players who are coming into the game. They need that. I need that.
Yeah, they're getting their hair and makeup done. Yeah. You want to know all of the nervous energy. It'd be fun if they, you know, they save the rose ceremony obviously for the end, and that's when they just say goodbye to 10 people. But what if they almost had like a shot clock where the lead had to get rid of people throughout the night?
Because
there's going to be people where you go, look, it's just not going to be it for you. Like right away, you're gone. Okay. Right before you have your first, you know, bite of the charcuterie board, you two got to go.
I mean, that's funny. I like that.
Or they could do like a black rose on the limo exits. There's a first impression rose and then there's a bad impression rose. And it's like, if you get the bad impression rose, you go home immediately.
You know, or we're just, you know, they really do need to do that show. What's it called? Next, the HBO, the MTV show. Just at least one person you got to, oh yeah, like incentivize it. Like if you don't get rid of one person before they finish walking to you, then you lose someone you love at the end of the night. But you got to get them before their knees lock. Yeah, before their knees lock. Like, all right, you got to go. You're out.
Okay, I love this game mechanic. How we are hearing rumors that Bachelor in Paradise might be canceled. I refuse to believe it'll ever be canceled. But how would you fix Bachelor in Paradise?
Great question. I think what we know about Paradise, it has to be a single location where the cameras can get to everyone. Right. Yeah. So they essentially have some sort of like snow globe like environment. You can really do that anywhere as long as it's in that, you know, Bachelor in Paradise Canada was a great example of this camp out lake thing was perfect. It's just no one watched it because it's Bachelor in Paradise Canada. Like I want to like it, but like what do you do? It's impossible to capture that. So I think they could change the venue. I think they could, I guess they would have to create more scenarios where there's competition for dates versus like someone just showing up and having a date. Do the thing that Bachelor and Bachelorette do, which is the dodgeball dates, or do the thing that brings physicality into winning the date.
Yeah.
And maybe some sort of more two-on-one style where you really try to, you know, see who's got that attraction. And
ooh, two-on-one dates in Paradise. I don't think we've seen that.
Yeah, and maybe there's certain people in Paradise. Like we know certain people are protected. So maybe they just call it out. You got like five fan favorites, and it's like it's just gonna follow. Like they're not leaving. You know, maybe. I mean, if you have Maria,
they just say that.
If you have Maria on Paradise,
DLP is like, you're the five fan favorites. Yeah. You're not leaving.
Well, I mean, if they want to leave, but you could just say like, all right, you know, there's no, you know, because the show will just randomly, if someone doesn't find their match, they're gone. And it's like, we know that the show is protecting certain people. So just call it out and center the show around them. And then you can have all the jabronis come around that are kind of like more hit or miss.
Yeah, there's a British format that's coming out soon called, I think it's called Josh Must Win. And it's a competition reality show with all these just civilians that they put in this show. And one of them is named Josh, and he's kind of a sweet, lovable, kind of nerdy guy. And the show is, the producers of the show, in quotes, this panel of people are told, Josh must win. The other players can't know about this, but you will be given power to orchestrate wins for him in all these various challenges. And you have to get him to the end of this show, basically. So I think like things like that, that start breaking that fourth wall about like producers' involvement in how all of this is being manipulated. I think we're going to start to see more of that in various shows. Maybe Bachelor would, put it in too. I don't know.
Yeah. And you know, obviously the show shoots a few months before it airs, but what if you had a like Bachelor Nation test audience that got to vote on things while it's happening?
Yes.
So take the fans and
let us participate.
Yeah. That way when you watch it, you go, well, 71% of our Bachelor audience that we pulled wants so-and-so to leave. So, you know, you got to go. And then
totally. It should air almost live. I think they should shoot for 3 days and air that on Friday.
Yeah.
Shoot Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, air it on Friday. So it's almost like a live sport.
They do it in Love Island. It's way more fun when it's happening live and then the people are still together versus it's shot, it's all edited, it's all spoiled, and then they're all broken up.
Oh, you could have a podcast going live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could have the podcast element happening live.
Mm.
You could even have other podcasts come down and record live. I've always said, I mean, it's just insane. I mean, the fact that they don't have you guys sitting on a barge just blows my mind.
On a barge?
Yeah.
Chad's just head to toe in a onesie. under an umbrella.
Yeah, the fact that they don't wheel out a pirate ship and have us all out there ready for the rejects to like interview is just beyond me.
I completely agree with you. Exactly. Look, it's going to get there. That's how pro sports are. You know, you have every network is there with their people who are covering it, and they all get the interviews literally as the quarterback's coming off the field. You know, that will happen eventually with reality TV. I don't think we're there yet because there still is this mindset of like, we control this. We, the producers and production entities, and like, we have to control the narrative and we have to control everything. And so they're not really going to allow people, I think, that much access now. As you know, in Bachelor, like you're saying with Maria, there's a year tacked on to the end of her contract that says for that year, we, the producers, get to say yes or no to every possible media appearance. If you want to start your own YouTube channel, your own podcast, we tell you, fuck you, no. And that lockdown is so bizarre to me. I think eventually it'll have to be lifted.
Yeah, they got to find ways to monetize it for the, you know, gone are the days where you're going to be gifted a million followers. So you got to give people a reason to kind of, you know, and I mean, we all know leads that turn down six-figure ad deals, and not because it's a bad company. It might just be Burger King, but the show wants to do McDonald's. And it's like, as simple as that, they turn these things down. And I mean, not to pat ourselves on the back, but I think podcasts like yours, mine, there's certain like Reality Steve that ask good questions that the fans want to know. And we're not there to protect anybody. We're not there to, but we're also not there to like sabotage anybody. We're just having honest conversations. I mean, when I had Braden and Christina, I was shocked that the producers gave me that interview. And I think it just so happened that I moved to Nashville and I was here and they weren't like the biggest story. So they gave it to me to do. And then, but they still wanted to see it. So I knew they were going to be looking at it. So I made sure not to ask questions that would violate, you know, the deep secrets and stuff. Cause I was like, you know what? That doesn't even really matter to their story. So you got to just like sort of play ball, but it's amazing that they're not giving out screeners. Yes. You know, it's like, they have no idea that your podcast, mine and certain others, the amount of downloads we get blows Entertainment Weekly out of the water. It blows some of these places that get the screeners ahead of time. And we know they get the screeners because the episode's 1 minute over and they got a 17 page article, you know, telling you what happened. And it's like, you know, it'd be a little nice to have a couple of days to work on these because we could then make better content when the time's right versus be scrambling. But yeah, they've yet to want to play ball. And again, it's might sound like I'm, you know, got a bone to pick. I just think it's idiotic.
Sour grapes. And
we talk about it for a living. Like, don't you think we bring something to the table? Like, clearly we've.
I just think it will make them more money. It just makes sense rationally that you'd want to promote them in every single way, have them do all the ads, have them.
Wait, though. Are you saying you think network television is run by rational people? Because it ain't. let's be real.
Look at Bravo, right? Bravo, nobody does it better than them. They have the after show. They've got all of these sort of conventions and things that they do. Yeah. Watch What Happened Live. Mm-hmm. They feed each other so much. And to think that the only reason The Bachelor doesn't do that is because they're on terrestrial TV and there's no time slot for them on the TV. There's a way for them to grow that digital audience if they wanted to. They just don't want to because that's not what ABC cares about.
And I think they're coming from a mindset that was developed in the early 2000s when there was no social media. And so when Instagram started becoming a thing, this is around, at least in Bachelor Nation, around 2014, with the rise of Andy Dorfman doing influencing, with the rise of Caitlin Bristow. When that started happening, the producers and I believe ABC, Warner Brothers, and ZK didn't like it because it meant that these players started to have some control, some agency of their own to make a living off the fame that the show had given them that is independent of the show itself. And they did not like that. And I think that seed of that feeling is still in the show. It's still in that producerial tier that's like, no, 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 we control this. We get to tell you everything you get to do. And they don't like that podcasts like ours exist. I mean, I think that is changing a little bit. I think there may in fact be two different factions of producers right now, some who don't like it and some who do like it. But I think there still is the sentiment that like what we do is not legitimate to the larger kind of Bachelor media nation.
Yeah. And, you know, and that burns bridges with good partnerships they could have. I mean, you think of all of the connections that are gone, the Katie Thurston's that clearly it's like, why should she want to be a part of the show? They kind of like strung her a lot. You know, it's like you see that they don't want to play ball. So there's no loyalty there. And then the show's only as good as the next crop of talent they could find. I mean, this is kind of like you talk about the third wave. The fact that The Bachelor has to reinvent its cast every year is insane. I mean, Jersey Shore was supposed to reinvent their cast every year, but they saw how good that cast was. They kept on building on that. Now, dating's interesting. You can't be redating the same people. So I understand the conundrum, but you know,
they could bring more people back, I think, in each season, who characters we already know.
They could have a far more robust post show. They've kind of stuck onto the, you know, we do it out of necessity as indie podcasters, the Zoom, but they could have locations in Chicago, New York, and LA, or they could just fly people out and do really great. I mean, like companies like Barstool have really great media setups. Like, how do they not have a good media setup somewhere when we can do? We were pulling strings doing the setup. That people like it's laughable how garbage Bachelor Happy Hour is, and it's like they can't figure their mics out. They're using the same mics, the sound's off, they don't have an engineer. Like, what are they're purposefully not trying to have. They're making it so easy on us.
It's an afterthought. Yeah, it really. I mean, look, when we first started in this podcast, that was the first thing I did, was sit down and listen to Bachelor Happy Hour, just all the different Bachelor podcasts that were around 4 years ago. And Happy Hour was the one that really made me think, like, oh, me and Lizzie can do this. This is terrible. We can blow this out of the water. The idea, though, I think, is still in the producer tier two. That's like, it is just season to season. How do we produce one more season of this? Who's going to be our lead? Get our cast in, shoot it, cut it, air it, move on. They don't think about, like, what is the legacy of this entire show? And it's getting a little bit better. They did bring some people back in.
That was the sacrificing the lead thing.
Yeah, sacrificing the lead.
Sacrifice the lead in service of the next season.
Exactly. But they are starting to get a little bit better about that. At the After the Final Rose, they had a bunch of different people from recent seasons back. Gabby Windy was there with Robbie. That was a good move, I thought. You know, they are starting to, like, open the arms a little bit to prior players to come back, which I think is good. I think it's indicative of them realizing, like, what Bachelor has over all these other dating shows is 22 years behind it. Love is Blind has been on since the pandemic, basically, you know, and it's like they don't really have the legacy. But even Love is Blind, if you watch their most recent reunion, it was stacked with all of these power couples from every season were there, basically, to be like, yep, this works. We're still together. We're pregnant. We're having our baby. So hopefully Bachelor's taking some notes there. I don't know.
You know what's really innovative? Filmmaking. Now, hold on here, Vanderpump, because
now you're talking my language.
So I say this because you don't even have to watch the show to understand what I'm about to say. They have the new show called, like, The Valley. They literally have Jax enter the Vanderpump world in a scene and then, like, walk into the valley. And without cutting to a break, they introduced a whole new show. And then, like, 5 minutes later, you're like, what show am I watching? And you realize they're teasing The Valley, and then they go back to Vanderpump. So it's like you could bring in Courtney Robertson for a scene on The Bachelor, and then go off on some weird tangent where you talk about life as a mom with her new kids and everything. And then all of a sudden they're like, all right, join us on our YouTube channel to learn more about what Courtney's got going on. You could do all of these ways of reminding people of how robust this alumni group is. But again, it all leads back to, they don't have the time in that slot, and they don't have any will to add any other sort of stories outside of that specific time slot.
I agree. I think the fact that it's chained to network TV is a huge detriment. I wish and I hope that Warner Brothers realizes what they have in the Bachelor franchise, and eventually it becomes a streaming empire. I mean, that has to happen, obviously. Network TV is dying, but I think they're still just trying to suck every last drop of blood out of it that they can until literally the doors shut at ABC.
Yeah, you know, they don't have to, they can let Bachelor, you know, they get 50, I don't know, 100 hours a year or something crazy like that of content. They don't have to worry about younger Sheldon or whatever hell, some other show. It's just like, they know it's going to be serviceable. It's going to hit singles and doubles. Nothing's going to happen that's going to make it the biggest show of the year, but it just fills that slot. And like you said, I mean, I think, like, Love is Blind on Netflix could do what The Bachelor does and release episodes weekly. I find it so unbelievable for me to try to cover Love is Blind because I'm like, I'm not ready to watch 9 hours of content. And I think The Bachelor's...
I don't know what you're talking about.
the best thing The Bachelor's got going for it is it still operates on the water cooler schedule. Yeah. And you'll have to watch it because if you don't, you're going to miss out on the next day's conversation. And I hope if they ever do go streaming, they can still keep that sort of psychology going with the new media.
Yeah.
I agree. Love is Blind should do that. Even if you want to front load it, like do 2 or 3 episodes first, then do it weekly. But it's not in the conversation for that long when it's all done in a few weeks.
Yeah, it just comes out. It's a big explosion. It's like crystal meth analogy you're using. It's just like getting super high and then there's a big come down.
Because then there's these side stories that would have fed us for the whole week, but yeah, they all come out at once. And once in a while, The Bachelor will have that where you've got the Golden Bachelor and then a divorce and then Greg Grippo's single. And you're like, well, hold on. These are all weekly things. Yeah. Like, give me a second. like, can we spread out a breakup once in a while? Yeah. But then on Love is Blind, it's like, all right, I got 9 hours of this before I can. And then it's just like graduate level recapping. And if that's not your main show, it's just a lot. So yeah, I think The Bachelor, I think that's what's good is they'll give you something, give you 6.5 days to think about it and then give you something again. So that strategy I like. But I think if The Bachelor was just an independently produced show and it wasn't attached to ABC, I think it could do all of these things that Bravo is doing with having the chat. I mean, that Bravo Andy Cohen show, you could produce that on the most shoestring budget. Yeah. And it could go live to everybody. Mm-hmm. And you can get everyone to be a part of it. You shoot it in a major city. It's just comical. But The Bachelor doesn't allow those of us to even have those conversations because they're all under contracts. But how great would it be to have that going on live and for those that want to be a part of the after show, give their fresh commentary as they're watching it play out. Cause you have these alumni, they're watching this edit for the first, wouldn't you love to see what Maria's thinking being like, Sydney's a backstabbing bitch. Like you would love to hear her in the moment, but yes, they're like, no, we're going to hear about that for 2 years.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
I agree. I totally agree. Well, Dave, thank you so much for joining us today. Do you have anything else you want to add? And also, where can people find all your stuff?
Well, I've moved my podcast to the commuter hours twice daily, 25 minutes twice a day, every weekday, Bachelor Rush Hour. I don't just cover Bachelor. I cover all of pop culture. I'm going to be changing it to the Rush Hour as we kind of branch out, but everyone can go find me there. We've been so lucky to have that really take off and the YouTube's going fine too. And all that. But, I got a baby due on my birthday, May 1st. So that's right. You saw Tasha over the Christmas, I believe she was probably showing. And we're ready. Her birthday's my wife's May 8th, so we got this whole Taurus family we're creating. So
I'm May 11th.
There you go. Yeah, so I've got a bunch of interviews I've been doing with all of the parents of Bachelor Nation. Oh, wow. I've got Lace, Blake, and Thomas. Blake Horseman and Thomas, they're all coming on. And then we just got Claire Crawley. She's got a 3-month-old. And I talked to Stephanie from She's All Bachelor, young mom. And then also Jess Ambrose. So all of the Bachelor parents are coming to my help for a little paternity leave to have good family conversations. So,
that's awesome.
Are you excited for baby?
So excited. We got it all. My audience just has literally brought me to tears. They wiped out our registry, our baby registry. Oh, wow. One day I looked out my window and I just saw Amazon trucks start pulling up. Oh my gosh. I owe the world to them. They've done so much for my family between the legal donations and the registry. So we're able to just kind of relax and now just, we're going to go for a nice long walk. And when the water breaks or it doesn't break, when, you know, I got the timer, I got the stopwatch for the contractions. I'm like, you want to talk about sport. I'm ready to go. We're ready for the big.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yes. Get the catcher's mitt.
Yeah. I'm going to be receiving the baby. I signed the paperwork. I'm like, put me in, coach. We're ready.
Oh, wow.
Oh my gosh, so exciting. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We miss you and we always love chatting with you.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Please rate this podcast.
Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver five times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
Sweaters, candles, the dreaded bathrobe. Unfortunately, Mother's Day gifts can be a little predictable and boring. That's why an Aura frame is the perfect gift to mix things up this year. It was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter. Aura frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages. My mom loves hers. I'm throwing pictures of Skabooly and our cat up there. She's laughing. She's texting me. He's so cute. I wish I could meet him.
Cute.
It's the next best thing to meeting my cat, really.
You know, I love that it was so easy to set it up. I've recently learned I'm not good at building things. And I need an easy install. And this only takes about 2 minutes to set up the frame using the Aura app. Aura frames are Wi-Fi connected, come with unlimited storage, so you can share as many photos as you want from your phone to your mom's frame. She'll be grateful it's not another sweater, and she'll love the frame to see more of you. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's A-U-R-A, frames.com. Use code ROSES at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.